This is Community Transformed with Father Thomas Dubé.
Greetings and welcome once again. I am Father Thomas Dubé, Marist. You will remember that last week we were dealing in our program for healing gospel community, how it goes about. We finished with the principles. We are getting quite specific now, and we were on the point when we ceased operations last time. We are on the point of what we called, to summarize the New Testament idea, healing admonition, healing a beloved person. And that's not just utopian or romantic. It's what Paul calls the Romans, God's beloved at Rome. And when we admonish another person, heal, it's somebody we love dearly, and therefore it's gently done and in an amiable manner. We were on that point. And I had just said last week, for little bitty things that aren't worth talking about to anybody, we go and just forget them. Let them alone. If it's worth talking about to anybody, we go to the person as the gospel admonishes us. Now, I want to be still more specific about this. And I want to suggest steps in the healing admonition so that a husband and a wife are going to sit down and talk about a disagreement they have or the fault of another person, the other. Husband wants to talk to the wife about a fault she has, or at least it seems she has, or the other way around. I want to suggest, how do you do that in a gospel manner? You know, if we just lived even this kind of thing by itself, marriages would be improved immensely. There are marriages that do live this right now, and they are very happy ones. Now, I've got in my little outline here I put together, I've got steps, I'm calling it, in the healing admonition, that they're going to talk about something that is causing some trouble, maybe big trouble, maybe not as big, but worth talking about. What do you do? First step, and I'm going to be very specific here. The first step is to invite the other party to an admonition. And by the way, I don't think I'd use that word. Invite the other party to have a chat. Now, this goes, by the way, for convent and monastery. When they've got a difficulty between two people, one invites the other to have, Bill, Brother Bill, or whoever, Father, may we have a chat, okay? And you present to this person a fact that it is a chat, because that's what it is. It's not one person banging the other one on the head. And I've got to straighten you out, brother, wife, dear, darling, I want to straighten you out about something. That is not the attitude. Attitude is immensely important here. Really, what this first step means is, let's you and I have a chat about what seems to be a problem. And not a problem with you, it might be a problem with me. Though it comes over to me as though it's my problem. Maybe I'm also at fault, if there is a fault here. That attitude that I'm not here to straighten you out, I'm here to heal what seems to be amiss. Attitude is immensely important. And I would even explicitly assure the other party, I want to talk about what seems to me a problem, but I want to know and hear your view. And I'd say that explicitly. Immensely important. And not only is it good psychology to take this approach, it's common sense. I'm not infallible. I'm not faultless. And therefore, if we have something between us that's a difficulty, I might be maybe more at fault, if there's fault in it at all, more at fault than you are. And so I very humbly ask, may we have a chat? All right. Now, the second step, and the other person I trust will agree to have the chat. Describe the problem. Do not attack the person. Now, I'm quite sure that strikes you as perfectly common sense, and why do I even mention it? Because it's so clear. I mention it because people don't operate that way, only too often. They start by attacking the person. And then you might learn later what the problem is, and maybe you won't hear about the problem at all. That may sound fantastic to you, but it happens. I know it does. I then have done oodles of counseling with people, and I know this happens. So my saying, describe the problem. Objectively, do not attack the person. Let me give you an example. A couple decades ago, I wrote an article that appeared in a periodical for religious brothers, priests, nuns. And the article was a description of what was coming about in religious life, the polarization problem. Two very divergent views of where religious orders ought to go. And all I did in the article were two things. I described the divergences, and as fairly as possible, I know that there's a grave danger when you describe something you don't like to caricature it. Unwittingly, I know that, so I watched myself carefully. Is what I'm describing in the, I call them trends A and B, so I wouldn't even give them a caption or a label. And I forget which trend was which, but one of them, of course, I didn't like a bit, and it has proved to be a disaster. But in any event, when I was describing that trend, I was at pains. Is this really true? And have I exaggerated it with an adjective, or should I? I was at pains, so I'm quite sure it was objective. So I did that. I just described the two trends. And then the second thing I did was suggest something in the area of we better take some steps about this situation. All right, that's innocent enough, it seems to me. Well, I received a number of letters and reaction to this article. Happily, most of them were favorable. But I received one letter that I'm not going to share the contents with you. I didn't even save it, but I remember it very well. This particular correspondent, a sister, wrote me it was more than 2 pages. I think it was almost 3 pages. And she didn't like the article at all. Now, you know what she said in her letter? You might not believe this, but it's a fact. And it's a common kind of thing. She told me for two and two-thirds pages, what's wrong with me. And she and I are perfect strangers. I never met her, ever. And she maybe I should have been grateful for a free psychiatric evaluation, perhaps. But anyhow, she did not say a single word about the article. Now that might strike you as unbelievable. But I assure you, this is not rare, this sort of thing. People attack another one, and they don't even attack what was then said. So that, yeah, I can tell you this, if you write an article, and I am bothered enough about it that I'm going to write to you, I will talk about the article only. I will not evaluate you. I'm going to take for granted you're a sincere person, you mean well. I'm going to talk about what you actually wrote. And I'll say on page 337, second paragraph, sir or ma'am or whoever it is that writes the article, you make this statement, and then I will discuss your statement and the problem I have with it. I'm not going to evaluate you. I'm going to suppose you're good and sensible and mean well. That's an extremely important point in healing admonition. Because when you start attacking a person, you're just deepening the wounds. And I think the wounds also in yourself, not just the person you're attacking. It is not the way you bring healing and closure to a problem. And I would say never, practically never, impute motivation to the other person. That's what the Lord mainly means by rash judgment. Imputing a defective motive to another person, and you don't know the motive. We often think we do, but we don't. We're guessing. And very often the guess is wrong. I know that from experience too. And I think many of you know how many times you have been the butt of a motivation that you never had in your life and didn't have in the case at issue with somebody else. Stay away from motivation. Let me use an example. It's so clear, you might say you don't have to illustrate it, but it's not lived in practice. Frequently it is not. And so I think I should use an example. Suppose you have somebody, maybe you've got a good number of children in your home, And one of the children, old enough to be responsible, 11 or 15, is supposed to keep the dining quarters clean, or make it maybe the parlor area. And that means dusting the table and keeping the floor clean and all the rest of it. Now, if you notice that the table in that room is dusty, you don't go to your child, you should not, and say, "Bill, Susan, you're lazy. Look at all the dust on that table." You see, that's attributing motivation to the youngster. And you don't know the motivation. Maybe the child forgot. Maybe the child was asked to do something else by somebody else. You didn't know it, and it was more important, or the youngster thought it was more important and went on. No laziness at all involved. Stay away from motivation. What you want to say is, in a nice manner, "Susan, Bill, the table is dusty." Say it in a nice way. They get the point, and you haven't attacked them at all. You just described an objective fact. The third suggestion, or step, if you like, in the healing admonition is be specific. Sometimes it happens. I use another example from religious life because I deal mostly with religious men and women. And so I've had so many experiences that it's easy to illustrate from that context, and it fits marriage very well also. I'll be talking to somebody in spiritual direction. I'm making up the example, but I've met it so many times that, it's not a real large number of times, but not rare. Somebody will be speaking of a problem with this provincial superior, for example, or it could be the local superior, and some difficulty there. And so if it's a sister, doesn't tell me what the problem is, I will ask. I'll say, "Well, what is the complaint about you?" And she'll say, "I don't know." And then obviously I ask, well, "Have you asked what the complaint is?" She says, "Yes, I've asked." "Well, what did she say?" "She didn't say anything," is the answer I get. And so the thing is needed. There are some people that will complain about another or to another and never tell us what the problem is. So describe the problem specifically, unless, of course, it's perfectly obvious what exactly you're talking about. But I wouldn't easily suppose that. That is not too easily. The fourth bit of advice, and as I look at my outline, you know, these things, most of them at least, are so obvious, you would think you don't need to even talk about how to do the thing, the healing admonition. But the fact is, and I'm pretty sure everybody who thinks about this will agree, the fact is, these are the very things that are forgotten when one person has a feeling of anger toward another. And that's one of the problems with anger. You lose your reasonableness. And they forget these obvious things. So I'm going to mention them. Maybe it'll help somebody to recall them when needed. The fourth specific suggestion for a healing admonition, always remember, done with gentleness and love. The fourth suggestion is, take one problem at a time. A husband doesn't go to the wife, or the wife to the husband, and say, "Dear, I want to talk with you," and then go over a list of 5 or 8 or 10 different objections in this person. Unless you can generalize the objections that they are one particular kind of thing, well, then that's one problem at a time. There might be several illustrations of it, if it's needed, if illustration is needed, but one particular issue at a time. Reason, of course, I think is pretty clear. It's easy to muddle the situation, and one person get very defensive about this because it kind of being loaded on with objections to the person. Take one thing at a time and be specific about it. The fifth suggestion, again, it's perfectly obvious, but let me mention it. Choose a time for the chat where you can engage in a mutual exchange. That is, remember, you're wanting to hear the other person's view of this. You can go back and forth without a time limit. That's going to cut it short. In other words, ask for the chat or initiate the chat when you have time to see the discussion through. And that brings us to the last suggestion, which I referred to at the very beginning of this specific little step matter of how to go about a healing admonition. The attitude that you bring to this sort of thing is immensely important. In addition to what I said already, the attitude should include this idea, and it should be convinced, you're convinced of it in your mind. You're not simply going to say the words, but you're convinced of it. The attitude should not be, I am going to teach you something. Because I also probably need to be taught about this thing too. That's why I would want to know your view and invite it at the very beginning. So it's not, I'll teach you, just listen to me, and I'll straighten us out perfectly about this thing. Nope. It should not be either a kind of, I'm going to overcome you. I'm going to kind of conquer you about this thing. That is not the attitude to have in mind. And I take that to be obvious. You're just making things worse. At least to some extent, they're becoming worse, and probably you're not going to succeed. Now, so it's not those two things. What is the attitude? It is, we're both going to win in our little chat. Together, we'll heal what's amiss. And it could possibly be that I'm the one that's mainly at fault. That could be. But anyhow, it's not a question of my overcoming you, my winning, and you losing. It's a winner on both sides. That kind of approach, indispensable. Now, we have just finished dealing with healing an individual person or a situation between two individual persons. I want now to take up, though we won't be able to finish it this week, we'll finish it next week. I want to take up what I'm going to call communication in community. And by community here, I mean parish, I mean family, and especially, well, it's also the case with husband and wife, but a family situation where there might be adult children, brothers and sisters, that is, they're married, living in other places, or they've entered religious life or something, and a situation in a family in that sense. It could also be a family in the sense of children still at home. And of course, it's a family in the sense of a religious community of nuns or monks or priests and brothers. Communication in community. So we're envisioning that sort of thing. And even those who are married, maybe with only one or two little kids at the point, it still applies to them. They just modify a bit what we're saying as we go along here. Let's call this communication in community. And I'm not using two words simply to kind of say something a little bit clever. I'm not. There is a very close connection, intercausality, between communication and community. Intercausality in both directions. It's not accidental that the words come from the same root. So that if you have a genuine community in marriage, in religious life, in a rectory, if you have a genuine community, they can communicate. So community, when you have the real thing, makes communication easy. Now, in the other direction, there's a causality also. If you have communication, that is all it's supposed to be, it makes community to be. We've been giving a lot of reasons why that is the case. So each one causes the other one. And when you have that situation in human life, you can be sure that there's a very close nexus, a very close connection between the two realities, where each one brings the other one about. And that is the case here. Now, that being said, mutual causality, let's bear it in mind. That being said, I have a few introductory remarks to add to that one. The first thing is, there are two giveaway signs to a lack, signs of a lack of community, whether it's marriage or some other vocation, that despite the pleasantness when they have visitors and all that, despite the fact that they cooperate pretty well with each other or one another, there are two giveaway signs that something important is lacking in that community. And one giveaway sign is they are not relaxed, at ease in one another's company. That shows there's a kind of tension, especially if it's an abiding tension. There can be little tension things that come up here or there in human life, and I wouldn't worry too much about them. Passing things, small things. But if it's an abiding tension, a lack of being at home, as the expression goes, a lack of being at ease in each other's company, then there's something really lacking there. The community is not at all, I shouldn't say not at all, that would be an exaggeration, because there may be good things in it. But there's something definitely missing if they don't feel at home, comfortable, at ease with one another. The other sign that something is amiss is that there's no amiable discussion of real problems. There are untouchable subjects that neither of them want to bring up, and they have a kind of tacit agreement that they're not going to bring it up. There's something really missing in that community. Again, whether it's a convent or a monastery or a family home, something is really amiss. Now, so notice again, that underlines what I just said in our first introductory comment here to communication in community. It says it in another way, that there's a mutual causality there. If they can't communicate about certain untouchable subjects, then there's very much lacking in their community. Okay, now, there are two kinds of communication we're talking about here, and just so we're all on the same wavelength, let me distinguish the two kinds. There is, first of all, friendly, personal, individual level of communication. Now, that is obviously the case very often with a husband and a wife, because they are two individuals, okay? But if it's, say, the more extended family, they say the grown children are out, married, and so on, and there's a community problem in the family in that wide sense, when they come together to discuss something, then, of course, we've got the group kind of level of communication. So I just want to say a few words about those two types of communication. On the personal, individual level, which I take for granted would be the case in a marriage, a normal marriage for sure, you talk about, for example, your feelings, your emotions, joy, anger, fear, frustrations, and that kind of routine, I would presume, in an ordinary marriage. Not attacking other people absent, but sharing on that particular level. A person would share on this friendly, personal, individual level aspirations, what one would like to do, whether it's the husband at the job or the wife at a job, or aspirations for apostolic involvement in the church, evenings or something of that sort, or society. You would share those, of course. Personal problems are often shared, I think usually would be shared. Marriage is so intimate a vocation, it's pretty hard to see that they wouldn't share a personal problem. Unless it's the other person that's the personal problem, then they might not want to talk that over because of eruption, arrogance, or something of the sort, which we've already talked about. And then, of course, fourthly, on the individual level of communication, we share news. Don't keep secrets unless there's a good reason to keep a secret. If something is confidential, then we should not tell another person, even somebody very close. Unless we got have a release from the person who placed confidence in me or in the person involved. All right. That is the individual level of communication. Now, I'm not going to be talking about that except to make the point that we should be ready for this kind of individual, personal, one-on-one conversation. When the other one asks for it, we should be available and quite willing to do it. Always ready to share with the other person, unless it's a sheer waste of time. If somebody wants to talk to you about something for the 19th time, you might say, well, look, dear, we've discussed that, and gently demur. Now, the kind of problem we are going to be talking about on the communal level, let's call it, I have a special name for it, it's a problematic communal level of sharing. Now, I'm thinking very much of a convent, of a monastery, of a parish, and of extended family in the way I've been using that term in this segment, I want to talk about that one for a bit, just to identify what it is, and then in next week we shall take it up for considerable comment. By problematic communal level, I mean there are a number of people involved, and it could be just the two married people, husband and wife, but there are a group of people usually involved, communal, and it's problematic, they disagree. And thirdly, it's something important. It's not some little bitty thing. So, it's communal, it's one in which there's problem, they disagree about it, and there is a serious matter at issue. That's the kind of communication we shall be talking about next week. We'll identify it more closely next week, and then we shall offer some thoughts. How do we discuss this sort of thing in a gospel community? It's a healing of the group. We take up at this point next week. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Community Transformed with Father Thomas Dubé on EWTN Global Catholic Radio.